Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our June the 23rd, 2018 episode. We have John and David Timmons with us tonight. Welcome to the show, John and David.
Oh, good evening.
Good to be here, John. I'm looking forward to doing this show on the Kinks.
This is a band that's always stood out to me, but what I think we ought to – I'm going to put out there right off the bat – I was a big fan of the Kinks from 64 through probably Lola, and that was, let's say, 70. And so I think that's going to capture most of our music today, too. But the Kinks were very – they went on through almost into the 90s, into the mid-90s, and played.
Oh, yeah, they all
stretched there. Yeah, and so there's – when – I talk to people that talk to me about the Kinks, guys. They'll talk about a different Kinks than I'm talking about. And it's always Ray and Dave in it, but it's different because the Kinks in my head is Pete Quaife and Mick Avery. That was the classic Kinks, as you would, you know, could say. And then they went on and were different, although they sounded the same, but they progressed and they did different things. How are we going to break that down today, guys?
Well, we got what we call the vintage Kinks, and like I said, they had in 18 months, they charted with so many songs from All Day and All the Night, Tired of Waiting for You, Everybody's Going to Be Happy, just went on. And John and I got really privileged to see the Kinks live, and I tell you, they are one of the best live bands to watch, no matter who's in the lineup. And we've seen them at the same time when they were doing the Under Pressure tour. And this was around 1980-81. And like you said, they just kept continuing. But I'd say the Kinks themselves have never really been like the Who, the Stones, the Beatles. They never got into that, what I call, where you talked about them in that place, because the Kinks were their own self-image. They believed in London, England, believed in England, stick with their English heritage. If you listen to most of their songs, it's strictly to do with what they did in England and proud of it. And I'll let John take over now.
Well, I think one era, as you just said, was the British Invasion era, where the group enjoyed tremendous commercial success internationally, including the United States. And then you have the period there, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in more detail. I'll let Dave tell the whole story, but where they were not permitted to play live in the USA for a couple of years. And there's some people feel that that changed the direction of their music by not having that American influence. And they were already more true to the British way anyhow, and it just further enhanced it. And then by the time it gets to the 70s, Ray is so creative, and I think my thought is, and I hope there's some really avid Kink fans out there. I'd like to hear their opinions on this, but I've made the money now. I'm going to write the songs that I like writing, and if you want to buy them, that's fine, but I like concept albums. And I think that was another era, and they made it through that. And then they got a great push from their label by the late 70s, early 80s, when they had the new contract with the Arista label, and they really pushed them, and they find all this huge as far as commercial success again, and went back more toward a rocking sound again. So that's the three eras that I can think of. Of course, a lot of people forget, John, as you just mentioned in the opening there, they were a very much an active band as recent as 1996. I mean, we talk about the British Invasion, but they went into the 90s, which is just amazing.
Yeah. No, it is amazing. It's something that I hadn't really realized, because I kind of lost track of them in the 70s. And I know that a couple of people that I knew said that they would go to their concerts and they would I don't know how true this is, but I had people tell me this. They would get in free if they brought two cases of beer with them. And they would go around, and they would go around back, and they would see the guys with the cases of beer, and they would go in, and they would flop the cases of beer down on the stage, and they'd let them in.
I saw this personally, John, in Oxford High, didn't we, John? He Ray Davies would grab the beer, open them up, and shake them up, and shoot them all over the first four rows, because I got hit with some of the beer. And this is true, John. And what I want to bring up about this, you was talking about the Kinks, how everybody thinks of the 60 Kinks, and John brought up about the concept albums. Well, Ray Davies, what I want to say, when RCA Records picked up on them, when Reprise Records kind of gave up on them, RCA, that's when he started doing all these concept albums. The main one I can always remember is the Village Green Preservation Society. And then it seemed like the Kinks just became Ray Davies' backup band. It's probably how I would describe it.
Well, that's interesting to me because, okay, so you've got the 64 Kinks with Quaife and Avery, the classic guys. Those are the guys that... And if I'm not mistaken, I even think, it might have even been Avery was the drummer. And I think they used other studio drummers from time to time. And
even Jim Keltner played for him once.
Wouldn't that be kind of embarrassing if you're in a band? They think, well, we're going to record this song, but you can just sit over here and play the tambourine while we bring in another drummer. But I was thinking about that because I think that did happen on some of their big hits. And but anyway, Avery went on, and I think he's still out there. I know Quaife passed away, I believe, and not too long ago. Yeah, but Mick Avery was out there with this band called the Castaway Kinks. Have you heard of them?
Yes.
What do you think about that?
This is what John told me. Ray Davies has nothing bad up against him. He joined him on stage in London, didn't he, John?
Yeah, there's a couple of videos on YouTube where he joined on stage, which I was surprised to see because I was under the impression that he did not like the fact they were doing it. I was thinking, well, if he didn't like it, he wouldn't have come up on stage at two different locations, and people are filming it, and all like, you know, like, what a surprise. Here's Ray. He's joining them now. And
wow,
he was even joking around with the other members. And you can check them out, John. There's like one of them, he's doing You Really Got Me, and the other one, I can't, it's not one of her bigger hits, but there's at least two videos at two different times where he came up unexpectedly and joined them on stage.
Well, he has...
Ahead,
I think he just released this last year a solo album, if I'm not mistaken, called Americana.
Yes,
and it did pretty well for him too. And there's another album where he had guest people appear on it and sung their favorite King songs. And I gotta say this about Ray Davies, he is quite a songwriter, and he also hosts his own TV show in London. In between the times when we'll get more into it, it's when he's kind of like exiled out of the United States. And he also wrote a play called Piano Player, and it got so bad reviews, the play only lasted 2 weeks. And that was in late 69. And so,
now, he also did his own rock opera too, didn't he?
Yes.
Like, in fact, I think it might have been the same time the Who was doing their thing. I think, it seems like I read this, that Ray Davies wrote one, too. It just didn't get as well known.
Yeah,
I
think that's
name,
right.
Oh, it was called Arthur. It was called Arthur, and that play was Decline and Fall of the British Empire. And it was his
that was
own
also the name
opera.
Of an album.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's where they got the song Victoria. But mostly it was Ray Davies. And so... he kind of got involved a lot of things, but him and his clash with his brother's always been a classic.
Yeah, that's what, you know, I'd like to get into a little bit. So they had, I did read a little bit about where Ray was saying that as a working musician in the 60s, that they had they released, you know, a couple of singles that didn't work out too well for him. And they were playing a lot, and they were working really hard. And then when they put together You Really Got Me and it took off, that nothing was the same from then on. His whole entire life changed from that minute on.
And it was a manager they took in that really helped them, and his name was Chel Talmy, T-A-L-M-Y. And he took them under their wings and for them string of hits until – Ray Davies got to the point was I'll be my own producer, and that's where I think it started getting a little bit iffy, and especially with the first U.S. tour and everything. So they got, and like I said, it's amazing though. One of my favorite King songs, which it's not for a lot of it, has always been "Set Me Free," and they'd experiment, and the Kinks weren't afraid to experiment, but I gotta say this for the Kinks. They were never like the other British bands as more open. I don't think they ever appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. And I believe the only appearance I can remember them being on is a Chindig and two times on Where the Action Is.
John, do you think this is a good time for Dave to tell, or we can join together telling this story of supposedly what word has it what happened on the set of Where the Action Is and what was one of the reasons that led to them being banned from the USA to perform live?
This would be a perfect time for that. I'm really interested to hear that.
This all goes in detail. The Kinks are setting up equipment for Where the Action Is. They're setting up their speakers and everything. A guy bumps into Ray Davies' amplifier. Ray Davies gets mad at him. And this American producer says, I'll get even about this. He finds out later through the union that the Kinks do not want to pantomime the records. They want to sing them live. This does not pan out. In between times, they do Where the Action Is. It comes about during their 66th tour. By the time they're in Chicago, Illinois, they are told by the music labor union, either you guys were on any TV shows and stuff, you guys must pantomime the records, or and the Kinks said, no, we play live. We just don't pantomime. And at that time, they were banned for this from 66, and you brought up Lola. It would be not till Lola was released would they be back in the United States. The closest they would come would be Toronto, Canada. And a lot of people think it was over the Union, and also how Ray Davies would not back down to these big record producers that wanted him to do stuff. He wanted to hold his ground, and he held his ground, but it cost him 3 good years in the United States. And, John, on that one thing on Where the Action, it turned out to be very costly to him. And but yet they lived up to their ideals. I got to say that for them. And, but they was going to hold their ground. I'll let JT tell about that, more of that Where the Action Is part.
Okay.
But I found that interesting because the American Federation for the Musicians would not give them their permit they needed to perform in the USA. And
right.
And looking back, Ray thought that maybe that incident with the Word Action Is might have had something to do with it. There's another theory out there that they were a party hardy band. They would really enjoy having a good time, and they would get really wild when they came to the city wherever they were performing, and then sometimes there'd be a different kind of an incident on stage between performers. There's the famous one, I believe, between Dave Davies and the drummer Mick Avery, and if I remember correctly, I think that it was Avery that threw a cymbal and hit Dave Davies in the head on stage. I think that's the way it went.
Yeah, he cut his head wide open.
And it was Dave had to go to the hospital then. And
yes.
And this occurs on stage. So, you know, the group wasn't necessarily all tight together, but sometimes I think they were in such a party mode, and you throw in drinking, that you don't use your best kind of judgment at times, you know.
And then another thing we'll bring up why they got mad at them. Most of the British bands would tour with other British bands or other bands. The Kinks said, we don't want no other bands. We're the Kinks. We play like we want to play. We don't want to be with any other bands. And one of the most famous ones occurred when it was in Illinois, and it was in 1966, right before they had to leave. Ray Davies' guitar accidentally bumps into his brother and bloodies his nose. Well, Dave Davies takes it as a personal thing that his brother did it intentionally, and took his guitar and hit him in the back of the head at the neck of his. And I think between all this stuff, they were very free-spirited. And everybody thinks the Who was free-spirited. The Kinks themselves were really rough on themselves. And I think the Music Association said, well, we can't control these guys, so we're going to do what we have to do. And it's funny because they were long before the punk rockers, like you heard of the Sex Pistols and all them doing that stuff. This stuff was occurred in 66.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
And here's another story to show that they were the, you know, a lot of groups like to pretend like they're the rebels. They're the ones that go against anyone conforms. I think of Metallica. I always think of them. But the Kinks really, really were the rebels. They even fought with the people who were the promoters. I mean, you name it. Story has it, when they were doing a USA tour in 1965, ticket sales were slow in the USA, and the Kinks felt that their record label wasn't doing enough to really put them out there to let the people know that we're in America, you know, market us to sell the tickets. Not to mention, their music was starting to change some, and the fans were wanting to hear You Really Got Me. And by late 65, Ray's starting to do some little different songs that are very much more English, you know. So the American guy who was the promoter, when sales weren't going too well, tried to work out a deal with the band and say, I'll just give you cash. We'll cut off the tour. It's not working. And this is the one I really like. Ray Davies and the band said, I'll tell you what, we'll keep playing, but we're just going to shorten our concerts. And so what they would do, they would only maybe play for an hour or so, and some nights they'd only do an extended 45-minute jam of You Really Got Me.
Oh, no.
And there was an interview with this roadie who worked with him, and he said, well, it was 45 minutes long, but it wasn't the only song of the show. They did other songs.
Yeah. And I got to bring this point up about it. There was a big rumor mill. John, you know what I'm getting ready to talk about. JT does. 1966, the summer of 66. Well, at that time, Mick Avery gets sick. They're playing in Ohio. I don't know how this, I don't know if it's an urban legend about them. They claim a boy from West Jefferson sat behind the Kinks drum set and played for the Kinks. And John, my brother John said that all the high school guys was talking about this, weren't they, John?
Well, yeah, you're the one who remembered it. I do. Once you remind me, I do recall this. And John, had you ever heard that before? That one night, or maybe more nights, that somebody from West Jeff sat in on drums, or is that just one of those urban myths? Because I heard about that, you know, years ago when I was a little kid, even, and I was like, wow, a local guy got to sit in with the Kinks,
and we never could prove it.
That's
but
the first I've heard of
the
that.
High school.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It could be an urban legend, but they claim they let a guy come up on stage. And
well, we can put it out there on social media, guys, and see if anybody knows anything about it, because it wouldn't surprise me if like I was telling you, if guys were getting into the Kinks gigs by bringing in cases of beer, then that would probably make sense.
Yeah.
So that's one of them legends. Because you wonder if it just, you know, some of them urban rock legends. But I like about the Kinks themselves, when you think of the Beatles, could you imagine the Beatles when they would back in doing the stuff they did? The Rolling Stones were supposed to be kind of the bad guys, but they didn't do the stage antics the Kinks did. And I always compared the Kinks with the Raiders. There's such a they always could have personnel changes, but you could keep having hits and the wild stage shows. But with the Kinks, they took it one step further, and that's one show they never got on was the Ed Sullivan Show, because Ed Sullivan was very shaky about them, which he would learn a vital lesson later on by Jim Morrison. Because he didn't know what the Kinks was going to do on the show. And they probably didn't know what they was going to do.
Oh, that's funny. So let's play another song. Let's play All Day and All the Night. Now, this is the follow-up to the big hit, right? Is this the follow-up to You Really Got Me? Talk about that a little bit, guys, because it's similar. You can hear this, you know, a lot of the same chord changes. The lead break's almost the same exact thing. Why do you think they followed it up with something almost exactly like it?
John, you've had guests on your show. I think it was a formula that was working for them, and it's successful. And I think that's what made them go ahead with the same riffs. And like I said, it was working for us. Let's do it and give it a shot. And I'll let JT talk here.
Well, All Day and All the Night, when you combine that with You Really Got Me, it is in many regards, as far as the origin of heavy metal, where when they trace how heavy metal developed, you hear many of these artists give the ultimate kind of tribute to the Kinks and to Dave Davies, particularly how he came up with the riffs and the riff sound and would do things that were kind of non-conventional. For instance, I think he actually would cut up his amp and to get a different sound out of it, because he had concluded you can only get so much sound with the strings and the chords, and that led to that power riff, and those two songs are really, you could say, kind of the holy grail that what was would become heavy metal later on. And that's why I think both of them together are just huge songs in the history of rock and roll.
Right, and they do say, John, that he took a knife and cut a speaker cone so that it would have that rattly sound to it that gave it that that unusual tone. But we do have a caller. Caller, do you have a question or comment for John and David?
Yeah, this is Mike, and I have a comment or a question. You talked about some of those early songs, but there's one I was asking about. Now, with the Beatles, they have Norwegian Wood from when they went to India, and, of course, the big thing there is about the sitar. But there's a song of theirs from the Kinks called See My Friends, and it seems to have a lot of Indian influence, too. And my thought is that that even came out before Norwegian Wood. Do you guys recognize that song and any Indian influence there?
Hey, you're right, Mike. It did. It did come out before the Beatles. And they were already experimenting with the sitar. And that's one of my favorite songs, too. I think it came out a month before what the Beatles would do with Rubber Soul. And there again, the Kinks was one step ahead of the Fab Four. And it is a great song and when they established that.
And Mike, I also used that in my 60s class. I played that for the class as a precursor to the Beatles. And I think the difference may be, and I could be wrong on this, but I think it was more of a simulated sound that they did with different back when drones had a different kind of definition, but it was definitely the Eastern influence, and it was definitely the sound of a sitar. So they were doing it before the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and then that was the order that sound appeared in music was Kinks, Beatles, Rolling Stones, and I think that just goes to show how much influence that the Kinks had. And the song is not that well known, but it was used in a tasteful way and not forced to just get another sound. And I'm glad you brought that song because it often gets overlooked.
I think The Who, they even said it was a great song for them. It was an influence for them.
Peter Townsend, Mike. Peter Townsend had so much respect for the Kinks that he for Ray Davies and Dave Davies playing and stuff that the song Dandy, Townsend played guitar on the song Dandy for them. And the funny thing is the Kinks didn't like Dandy, so they just said, let's let Herman's Hermits have it. And they ended up having a big hit with it. And they could have probably had a big hit with it, but that's the way the Kinks were. And so Peter Nude probably couldn't have been more grateful to get another number one single from them. And one thing about them in the studio, and J.D. brought this up, they weren't afraid to cut a knife and cut a speaker, see what kind of sound we get. And what made it so amazing, this band actually started actually in 64 and actually performed clear through 96 as a group. And anytime you get that long of a stretch, and they did one thing, they got in the Hall of Fame. And you know, Mike, who I'm trying to put in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, well, absolutely. Who else?
Yes.
So maybe the guys were doing a lot of drinking and had knives, maybe had something to do with them being not touring the U.S. Maybe, I don't know.
Oh, it's a wild story. Hey, Mike, I appreciate hearing from you, man.
And All right. Mike, you shared with me your favorite Kink song. You want to mention it here to Dave and John? Because it is a good tune.
Come Dancing.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's just a neat song. I just love that.
Hey, Mike, and the backup song after it, Don't Forget to Dance. Arista Records, Mike, and John brought this up early, changed their whole career, and everybody had written them off by 79, and when RCA let them go, Arista said, let's take a chance on them again. And I think they did some of their best work there in the 80s. And that is a good song. And he always liked to come dancing. And he does a pretty good dance scene in the video.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And,
well, thanks
and,
a lot.
And, Mike, I want to mention one thing while we're on the air. As you know, we're doing our rock and roll trivia show in Mount Sterling next Saturday, June 30th. And I understand it's quite a drive, but if you get a chance to come back, we always enjoy having you in the audience.
Oh, it's one of my favorite things. All right. Well, nice
yes,
talking
sir.
With you guys. Thank you.
Oh,
right.
Take
thanks,
care,
Mike.
Mike.
All right, thank you.
Well, we could talk all day and all of the night, so let's play. Back with John and David Timmons. You're listening to John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John, and I'm talking on the radio. That's why we came up with that really cool name, John Talk Radio. We will be switching. July 11th will be our first show we'll have on Wednesday night. So our Saturday night show and our Thursday afternoon show will combine into a Wednesday night show. We will still be doing special shows on different days and stuff like that. I've always been able to adjust to people's schedules, and if we need to do that, we'll do that. This is just so that we can have some of our weekends free, and I think it's just the time to do that. This will be the we're in our 10th year at John Talk Radio, and we just really appreciate it. One of my favorite shows is John and David Timmons coming on, so thank you guys for being a part of this all these years, and we really appreciate it.
Oh, we have a lot of fun doing this. I enjoy being on here with you, John. It is. It's always great.
Now,
John,
all day and
I
all
think,
the night. Yeah, go ahead, John.
I just going to say you're doing a great service bringing a show like this where you promote independent music, you promote independent artists. You give us the opportunity to reflect and talk about the history of rock. There's just not too many options to learn about these kind of things, and I think it's great that you have this and put it out there for the public to hear.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think one of the things that people like about this show and about your show, it's done from the heart. There's no, it's not for any monetary gain. It's not to be a DJ. It's not to get, you know, my own show syndicated or anything like that. It's to bring the music and just to have a platform where we can talk about music, we can listen to great music like this, we can listen to musicians and talk, you know, having the blessings to be able to talk to some of these musicians and you know, get their ideas of what was going on and back in those days, some real firsthand accounts of what happened in the 60s and in the 70s. But when I was listening to this song, it just got my curiosity a little bit. When I listening to All Day and All the Night, I don't, if that's not Mick Avery drumming, who would that be? Because whoever it is did a really good job. I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm thinking it's Mick Avery, but if it isn't, that he's like got a lot of energy going on, and it's like a lot of open cymbal and tom-tom work, and I mean it's real aggressive drums for that time for 64.
I just hope the Kinks didn't have a drummer like Spinal Tap used to have.
Well, you know what? You know what his name is?
I very used to blow up all the time.
Now, okay, I'm thinking of the bass player. Yeah, you're right. The drummer, the drummers kept coming and going.
Yeah,
yeah,
they kept
you're
getting blown up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was Nigel.
Well, I just heard this week that Derek Smalls, who is the bass player, who is Harry Shearer, has a new album out.
Is this a reunion of Spinal Tap then?
No, it's just Derek Smalls, and he's got an album out.
Wow.
And I heard it's actually a Harry Shearer's album, but he's going under Derek's. And I've heard it's pretty good, so I love that kind of stuff. The satiric.
That sounds interesting. Oh, I did find out another comment too. We was talking about the Kinks. Well, one of their import EPs, and this caught a lot of flack too. They made some comments about acid in one of the concept albums, and I don't think they were talking about the acid you used to pour on stuff either.
That's sulfuric acid.
Yes. I think it led a few problems.
Well, yeah, that's pretty interesting. I mean, it wasn't as if the Kinks were the only band doing that.
That's
I mean,
true,
good
that's
Lord.
True.
They're going to let Uriah Heep and all those bands come through.
Oh, King Crimson.
Not... Yeah. It's
just part of the territory.
Yeah, that's...
That's amazing, but... I don't think that EP was a top seller, but they did try that.
So at that point, these guys are playing pretty much British Invasion, like you said, John, and they're knocking it out of the park. So where does it go from there? Like they're starting to edge in closer into the mid-60s, starting to play a little different type of music. Ray Davies is starting to sing more about London and the styles and fashions, and where do they progress from the three chord rock of those two songs we played earlier to where they are in 1965-66?
Yeah, that was a transition that some people have kind of labeled it the time when Ray Davies overnight went from rocker to becoming an older and wiser man in the way he approached his music. And they said that's unusual because it took a whole different direction. You know, people kept wanting more rock. And I do want to tell this quick story before we leave All Day and All the Night. We use it in our trivia show. There's one set that we do and where I play All Day and All the Night and ask people, you know, who's the artist, who's the song. And I don't say anything. And then the next song I'll automatically play is Hello, I Love You by The Doors. And it is uncanny when you play them back-to-back how similar Hello, I Love You sounds to the Kinks song. And and in fact, I don't think Ray Davies wanted to challenge him on it, but his people told him, you should. And eventually... It did go to court in the UK, and it was in favor of Ray Davies, and the royalties of the song are now paid to the Kinks and Ray Davies.
Is that right?
Well,
yeah.
That's worth the challenge, then. He threw the
flag out. Now, that's according
then,
to the book called No One Gets Out Alive, you know, about the Doors. Now, assuming that's correct, that's what it says in that book.
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, you guys was talking about the Ray Davies, how he was maturing. Where he was maturing was in his songwriting. His songs, then, he was starting to become more of a songwriter, because he wrote for his own song, A Well-Respected Man, and it got good going for him, and also a dedicated follower of fashion. And he was going on what was going on in downtown London. Yeah, the people in the United States couldn't figure out what he was writing about, but there comes back to their British heritage, and you get thinking about the Stones and the Who and the Beatles. Yeah, they wrote about Strawberry Fields, the Beatles, then the Stones about certain things in the Who, but with the Kinks, they talked about Canterbury Street. They wrote about Mushwell, where they growed up. It was just their heritage, and they kept on doing this stuff. And his maturity as a songwriter got even more so when he started writing a Sunny Afternoon. He got to the point where I can write these songs, and I can produce the records at the same time. And that's when they did away with their management, that Talby. They finally let him go because Ray said, I can handle all this. Here's where the problem started. Little brother didn't like the idea of big brother writing all the songs. And many a times on stage, this conflict would happen or in the studio. And one incident in 1966, they were doing a song. Well, Dave Davies took, and we talked about it again, kind of kept bumping into Ray. Finally, Ray got so mad, he just didn't bump into him. He pushed Dave Davies out into the audience. And so I think the songwriting and stuff is a little jealousy was starting between the two brothers. And it all started about around early 66 when Ray knew he could write songs. But Dave Davies wrote a few good songs himself. But as a songwriter, he was developing and getting stronger in writing these songs.
Now, how did that affect them? Because they played together for many, many years. But if they had this friction on stage, how did it affect them as brothers? Because am I correct in saying they aren't speaking in speaking
they
terms now?
John, I did some research. They have still not spoke. This is what broke up every Kink reunion. Everybody thought this summer there'd be a Kink reunion. Because he's jammed with the other Kinks, the ones, and Dave Davies, as far as I know, up to the last 3 months ago, the last time they spoke together was 1996. And that's what you call not brotherly love, I'll tell you that. And until they can shake hands, I think that's what's going to stop any Kink reunion, because I don't think Dave Davies will let them go on the road without him fighting it. But I don't see where he could stop it either. But I tell you, what do you think of the Oasis, the two Gallagher brothers?
Oh, yeah, it's the same thing.
I work with a brother. It gets interesting.
You guys have never beat each other up.
He's a really good guy, that guy you work with, Dave.
Yeah. He's got a good personality. He's very picky when we set up for a show, but he's a good guy.
Yeah, I haven't seen you guys puss each other off the stage or anything yet.
No.
So.
No.
Yeah. That's pretty good. But, yeah, the Gallagher brothers are basically the same way. I mean, it was like Noel was writing all the songs, and he was the man, and then Liam was singing all the songs, and then Liam was thinking, hey, you know, I can write. I can do this. And not saying that they can't, but it's just – and then you have egos and all kinds of things coming into that. But I was just wondering how that worked with them, even though they weren't really friendly to each other. They still – professionally performed as a band for over 30 years.
Yeah, I think, John, you brought the point. They were still professionals. And I think they know they can make money, sold records. And sometimes you'll let stuff that you think, because we're performers first. And I think that's why The night John and I saw him, we was fourth row from the stage. You would swear there was no animosity between them, would you, John? And they performed, and then they would cut and laugh up, and just like I said, I think they know we're performers first. Whatever our personal difference is, let's hold back on this. Our audience wants to, but I think there's a lot of bands like that, and we get thinking about it. There's so many bands that with family members, I think it's really difficult. And of course, we talked about that this afternoon about family members and bands. But I think it comes down first. We're quality performers. Let's give the people a show.
Yeah, I think that's probably how it is. I also think that they're not getting any younger. They're in their 70s. I would imagine both of them would be.
You'd think they would get over it by now, but then again,
they just get over it.
It may not be. I think of Aerosmith, the most one of the functional bands of rock and roll, and Joe Perry could take his guitar and hit Steve Tyler in the head, but he needs Tyler to make money, and it gets interesting. That's what makes rock and roll so fun.
Well, even that's correct, David. But Dave Davies even had a very bad stroke, and he was like in very bad shape, and he's come all the way back, from what I understand.
He performed in. Hey, John, didn't he perform JT in the Charlotte area just last summer?
I don't know if it's in Charlotte, but there's someone that's an avid Kinks fan. I'm hoping they call in who could tell you who's seen both Ray and Dave in separate concerts, like in the last maybe 3 or 4 years, has seen them both in concert. Could give you an up to date report on what their shows were like. But yes, he had told me that the concert he went for Dave Davies was actually a well done show.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. We have a band on here, the Striped Bananas, have been on the show several times, and Duncan Shepherd is a big Dave Davies fan, and he's seen him, and he said that they got to meet him afterwards, and he was very cordial, very nice and polite, and they really enjoyed their time there. So let's play a couple other songs. The next two we have lined up here is Tired of Waiting for You and Dedicated Follower of Fashion. Would you like to talk about those two?
I'll let John go first. Oh, yeah. I'll talk about Dedicated Fall of Fashion. That is one of my all-time favorite Kinks songs. If you're a history fan of rock and roll, he describes everything that the English dandy wore back at that time. And you could think of Canterbury Street, how they wore the big ties, the bright shirts, and everything. He describes it. And to an Englishman, you were on top of the world in a rock and roll band if you became follower of fashion, whatever the phase was, and you was wearing that. And the biggest example, I want to tell all the listeners out there, get out an old rock and roll magazine or something from the 66, 67, and the big, colorful paisley ties. I like some of the styles yet, the paisley shirts. And any style, the bell-bottom pants, it kept changing with fashion and got with that time. And I think he wanted to express that. Well, meanwhile, over in the United States, the fashions was a little bit behind what they were in England. And they said, wonder what these guys are singing about. And but still, if you listen to the song, he describes it to the T, how this guy's making money now, and he's going to follow the music. And I'll let John talk about the other song.
Well, I want to point out that since we don't have the visuals to offer on the air, that they were known for dressing really classy in this period of 64 or 65. I don't know what you call the type of shirts, but it looked like something from the colonial time where it had that fluffy look, and they'd have a nice dress coat on and slacks, and they looked like beetle boots type shoes they were wearing. I mean, they, even though they were kind of the guys that were sort of hooligans and would get into it and the beer would flow, and they had a very classy look to them. And this song, Tired of Waiting for You, in my opinion, is one of the transitional songs going from that harder edge with the kind of distortion rock to, you could see something was coming in the future Ray's writing, because this was the one song they had a debate whether or not for Dave Davies to have a kind of a louder type of guitar sound in this one, and they were concerned it would take away from the type of song it was, because it wasn't a rocker, but end up including it and end up working out well. It became a big hit, and for its time, probably the perfect pop record. So they rolled the dice and decided to keep in that sound, and it kept Dave happy, and yet you could see the changes that Ray was starting to make.
Well, let's play it. This is Tired of Waiting, a dedicated follower of fashion. This is John Talk Radio. We'll be right back after this.
Love. captive. This pleasure-seeking individual always looks his best, but he's a dedicated follower of fashion. Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
Oh, yes, he is.
He flits from shop to shop just like a butterfly. Of the club, he is a pickle as can be, but he's a dedicated follower of fashion. He's a dedicated follower of fashion. He's a dedicated follower of fashion.
And we're back on John Talk Radio. This is June 23rd, 2018. My special guests are John and David Timmons. You can go on their website, timmonsrock.com. They will be playing at the Mount Sterling Community Festival on June 30th at 2 o'clock in the community building. And I think that's what it's called. And they will be doing their rock and roll trivia show. So please pack everything up, pack all the kids up, and go to the show. It's really well worth it.
I'll definitely be wearing my Paisley tie, too.
Are you going to wear your polka dots or your stripes?
Yeah, and I hope my nylons are
rings ready to go.
My Paisley shirt, it should be a lot of fun, though. Make sure everybody wears their Nehru jacket.
Yeah, David said he has one somewhere. He just has to find it, so that's the key.
John, I just want to say, while we mentioned our rock and roll trivia show, thank you for mentioning it, that we do the 50s through the 90s. We cover a lot of eras, and it's a good chance you'll hear about the Kinks, along with many, many other artists. And our show lasts about an hour and a half, hour and 40 minutes, and we certainly cover a lot of key artists and a lot of important moments in rock through questions and audio stumpers, and it's free. What great entertainment can you
and
get
great
for
family
free?
Fun too. It's something you can bring your family fun and be very comfortable with. I always like to tell people that.
Yeah, that means a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I've seen it several times, and I just really enjoy it, and you guys do a great job. Now, we're pushing through this 1965, dedicated follower fashion. Sunny Afternoon was 65, then Death of a Clown, which we talked about this morning, went in a little bit. Let's talk about this as the Kinks progressed, and you both have mentioned how that Ray was starting to write and get more creative in his writing, and that on top of the fact that they couldn't tour the States for, what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Then they had to basically just rely on their music. They didn't have the Ed Sullivan Show like a lot of these guys did. So what do you think? Do you think that fact that they couldn't tour the U.S. at that period of time, that helped them be in the creative way of songwriting?
I think it really did, John. If you look at some of their work, and I'm going to go to Dave Davies now. He, if you listen to the song Death of a Clown, everybody thought it was a satire song. It's not. Basically, he's feeling sorry for this guy. He'd been a famous circus performer, and finally the bottle has took over his life, because he said tears falls down the grease paint on his face, and you get thinking about that. And then he did so well with that one, he wrote a second song which didn't get as big for him. It was called Suzanne Still Alive, and they put it on an album. And he kind of got disgusted because they did put the Death of a Clown on as a 45, and he thought that should have been on a 45. But you see the maturity of the two brothers, and I think they worked harder than because they couldn't be in the States, and they made up their minds. And I think that's what gave the idea later on down the road for Ray to go into more of these concept albums, which we will see probably this comes along about mid-67, we will probably talk about that later, about the Preservation Society, and I'll let JT take over.
Well, I think you said, John, the other song is one which is Sunny Afternoon, correct? Is that the next song we're talking about?
Yeah, the next songs are Sunny Afternoon and Death of a Clown.
Okay, that's what I thought. Well, in regards to that song, There's some of a similarity between it and Taxman by the Beatles. They were out in similar eras, and both of them, with the Beatles obvious being very overt about taxes, but there are some lines in there that you can sense the Kinks were not happy with the direction the British, as far as the Labour government was going at the time with their strategy as far as the progressive tax, and I think they did it in a little more of a low key way, but I think that it's kind of hidden in such a unusual sound that almost puts you to rest, to sleep. I mean, it's got that what I call a Sunday afternoon lazy feeling to it on a sunny afternoon. It would fit right in that mode of a summer type song even. But the lyrics, I think, tend to reveal a little bit more than that.
You brought up a good point on this song too. Well, I always like that because he even says in the song when we listen to it and everybody out there, he says, "The tax man is knocking on my door, but all I got is this sunny afternoon." And it's so shades of John, and you brought up a good point of the Beatles' tax man. At this time, all the English groups are being heavily taxed, especially over in Great Britain, for their songs. And it was kind of like their little thing to throw at them. And he said, all he can hang on to is the sunny afternoon. So when the people listen to this song, listen very closely about the point we mentioned about the tax man knocking on my door.
Okay. Was there anything else you guys want to talk about before we play them? Or?
I want to give credit to the Kinks again. Actually, they released it was sunny afternoon before the Beatles came out, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but was Taxman on Revolver?
Revolver, yeah.
And that would come out, at least in America, until August. And this song was released in the USA, I mean, just wasn't much difference, but in July of 66. So they were very close together. So who's to say who did what first? But it was, as Dave said, it was a common thread with the British artists, like, hey, we got to find a place to hide away our music and buy some island or something, you know, that nobody's heard of.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's play them. This is Sunny Afternoon and Death of a Clown. We'll be right back.
So
The old fortune teller lies dead on the floor. Nobody needs her fortunes told anymore. The trainer of insects is crouched on his knees and frantically looking for runaway fleas. The death of a clown.
Hey, John, you know what I want to bring up? The main major thing on them two songs, the influence there was the old British dance halls. If you notice, they had that theme like they did in the 20s and 30s. They had and they was heavily influenced by the British dance hall scene. And if you listen to them real close, you can tell that theme is what they were doing. And I really enjoy that phrase there. That although he was drowning in whiskey and beer, he still had the grease paint on his face. But they loved that hall theme. And there's where I want to always convince it's that English influence. And you just couldn't see the Beatles doing that or the Who or doing something like that. It was just made for the Kinks.
Now, that airy sound, I really like that. I guess it's female chorus or something. I really like that in that.
The name of that person was Lori Brown that did them backup vocals. And she was a well-known dance hall singer. And she was already at that time 55 years old, but they'd seen her on stage. And so but she was good influence on that.
Because what it reminds me of, Dave, is because I think it was released about the same time in 67. It reminds me of the Beatles, She's Leaving Home, a little bit, that airy type sound. You
good
know?
Catch, Don. Yeah, you listen to it. Yeah, and it has an eerie feeling to it because I remember we played this song in Rock Hill, one of our shows, and a lot of the young kids said it sounded creepy to them on account of clowns. And I still can't get over that, but that's how they felt. Remember, John, they mentioned that. They felt shaky about hearing it. It has an eerie feeling to it, and you just can't imagine that. And then the other song, like I said, it just felt the same theme. And they were really, but I think what showed too the maturity of their songwriting too. By that time,
yeah, it really is a great song. I was just thinking, guys, I wonder how hard it would be to translate that to live if Dave does that now in his show, which I would imagine he does because it's one of his biggest songs. How hard would that be to translate?
Hey, John, we were lucky enough they did perform that song that night. Dave did, didn't he, John?
Yeah, they did, and at that time, I was not aware of it back then, and you had to explain it to me, and,
I yelled for it, and there's some other fans there, and John, it didn't have that eerie feeling, but he still did that song, and that night, they was doing mostly rowdy songs that night, because they was really on a roll, but I remember them doing Death of the Clown, and I think that was one of John's first times of hearing it live like that. And it was really neat to hear. And people don't give Dave enough credit for his own singing ability. And I think because Ray stands out a little bit more. But to hear that song live, and I want to bring up a song that they sometimes will do live and sometimes they won't. Is Still Lloyd Heroes. And that is another eerie song, and I'm going to let John tell a story about that later on if we got enough time when he was out in L.A.
You want to tell now? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
Actually, I was in Seattle, and I was there for a conference, and that afternoon, this was like about early March, and it was a kind of an overcast day. What a surprise. Yeah, a little bit of rain in the air. And it's probably about 50 degrees. And this amusement park, strangely enough, was open, but not open. I mean, there was no security. It wasn't actually open, but yet the gate was unlocked. So I'm walking through this amusement park on an afternoon, overcast, a little bit of rain, an empty park. And suddenly I'm thinking of this song, for some reason, Celluloid Heroes, because I'm looking around this empty park, and lo and behold, there was this one ride that started playing the song Celluloid Heroes. Now, what are the chances?
Uncanny.
I'm not making this up. And it was like a video, I'm living a video.
That's wild, man. I like that. That's a great story, though. things like that happen, and you start thinking, what is going on here? But that's
exactly.
That's a really good story.
And you think of that song, Celluloid Heroes, it's kind of a song, you know, you've got the Hollywood stars, and they said, don't step on Mickey, on Bela Lugosi, because he's liable to bite you back. And Mickey Rooney, even though you step on him, he's still green. And they always mention Marilyn Monroe, but they always go, sweet, sweet Marilyn. She was so fragile because she was just flesh and blood. And here's John Walker. You couldn't have had a better video.
Wow, that's really wild. And it is kind of, yeah.
It is kind of strange because, and Dave's right, you think it would be when I was in L.A. because, yes, I have been to Hollywood, but that's not when the song came through my mind. You know, it would make sense that's when it was. It was a completely different environment, and that's what even makes it stranger.
Yeah, that's a really cool story. So we got two songs left, guys. We got 15 minutes left in the show, and we have two songs left to talk about, and they're both pretty cool songs. Now, I have a little bitty story about Victoria. We have Victoria and Lola. Victoria is a really cool song. That's about their album about Australia, I believe. And
yeah.
I was in a band once back in the day in the 70s where we had I played a bass. We had two guitar players. We had two lead singers. We had a horn section, a backup singer section. We had a whole group of people that did all this stuff. And all of our music was, it was, everybody worked really hard to get it just like the record. And I played now this sounds weird, but I like that kind of stuff, but I also really was into the Kinks and rock and roll more, not so much formulated music. So I got some of the guys in the band together, and our little band played the breaks of our big band. I don't know if that's ever happened before, but so Victoria was one of the songs we played, and I really thought that was such a cool song back then. What do you guys have? And I played it, and I taught it to the other guys in like 2 minutes. Our other stuff was like, it would take literally months to get one song down, with horn sections and backup singers and everything else. But with this, it was just, you know, like two guitars, a bass, and a drum, and everybody just kind of sang, and it was fun. It's just one of the coolest memories I have. But talk about the song, John and David. What brings Victoria out?
That's one of my favorite King songs. So you're thinking about Queen Victoria. And I won't use the B word, but they do mention it in the song because she was so mean. And I the first time I would hear that, it was I had the 45, and I put that on, and I brought that 45 to my world history class because we was talking about Queen Victoria, and it played for a while, and then they got that one part. But I think what they wanted to talk about, how strong the British Empire was for so long. Queen Victoria at the time, and she was very mean, and the British Empire at times spread from India into Afghanistan, into a little bit of the Caribbean, and there again we talk about English heritage. And it's one of my favorite songs when they start off. And they always end that, John. When we caught them live, Victoria's always an encore song when they come back on stage.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
They came
back
that.
When we kept clapping. They would come back and do that one. And then the second one you kept clapping for was David Watts. They would come back and do that in their encore sets. And I'll let Brother John take over now.
I got a question.
Okay, go ahead, John.
I was just going to ask, did they do the Dave Davies song, I'm Not Like Everybody Else? Did they do that one?
Yes.
Oh, okay. And that was a great concert.
That night, that concert, John, lasted, John, would you say about 2.5 hours?
It was a very good, yes.
I know
they,
Dave did at least 3 songs.
I think they did like 4 encores. Every time you thought it was going to end, Ray Davies,
that's
that
awesome.
Night, John, I swear, he must have had 9 different sport coats. He kept coming out in a different sport coat.
Oh, he came out first in that pink jacket.
Yeah. And then he had one where it was on one side it was the Union Jack, and then he turned inside out and it was the USA flag.
Oh,
and he
okay.
made
That's
one
cool.
major mistake at night, John. Murray said hi when welcome in Cincinnati. Murray got
yeah.
booed. He didn't know he was in Oxford.
Well, he probably flew into the Cincinnati airport.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
But John, they did them on course, and I know they did them two on course, John. And then they for their third encore, I want to say they did till the end of the day, didn't they?
You could be right. They did so many encores, I couldn't keep track of which one.
They did Sleepwalker. They did Sleepwalker for that one. Man, they did some.
I do remember particularly though, because it was 1981, and they had just released that album. Oh gosh, what was "Give the People What They Want"? And their hit single they were pushing was, and I remember the way he said it, "Destroyer," and he kept saying it like that. And for some reason that just has stuck in my mind, you know, 37 years later, you know, because he was really pushing that song, and they must have did an extended version of it, you know.
Oh, they did a 10-minute. Hey, John, I got to say this, I tell people this day, if you got the live Kinks album they put out about the same time, it came out in 81, they did all those songs, but the encores, and John, in my all-time concerts, and I've seen the Boss, and I've seen the Beach Boys, and all these other bands, but to me, and John knows this, that was probably the greatest live show I personally was at, because the Kinks gave it 110%, because some people said, don't get your butt out of your seat yet, they're going to come out one more time, lo and behold, they came out again. But, hey, John, it was probably the best show I ever seen.
Well, let's play Victoria. We'll be right back to wrap up the show with John and David, and don't go anywhere.
Call the speed of the ridge.
is John Darlington. This is John Talk Radio. This is John and David Timmons. And this is our last Saturday night show. We'll be going to a Wednesday night format. And we just really appreciate it. I get a little feeling pretty good about making the move and changing up a little bit. But we've had some really great times with you guys. So thank you so much. And tonight's show is just made me feel good. It brought back a lot of memories. That last song made me think of me sitting on the stage with all the snooty musicians leaving that they were too good to play with me. And my buddies all got around as we passed a bottle of Jim Beam around and played that song.
Definitely the clown would have been proud.
No, I'm thinking the Kinks spirit. Yeah, the Kinks must have been in a spirit that, you know, let's just sit here and play a rock and roll song. But, guys, thank you so much.
Guys,
we got one. Yeah.
Guys, if I remember what the fourth encore song was, I Want to Fly Like Superman.
Oh, yeah.
That was the fourth song. At that time, I think Ray and Dave were ready to fly, too.
Yeah, probably one of them was flying. We've got 4 minutes to go. We got one of the biggest songs of the Kinks ever. I don't know, John, how they did with record sales, but it had to be incredible. Lola is a song that it broke a lot of barriers back in those days. I mean, they were talking about transgender and all kinds of stuff, things that were different, things that were, you know, not talked about. What do you guys want to say in the last couple minutes about Lola?
I will go first real quick. So, John, I think they broke the ground. This was the song that would open the door for glitter rock. Lo and behold, I know we had T-Rex, we had Bowie, we had the Hoople, the Kiss. This was a groundbreaking song, John, like you said. And it took nerve to sing this. And I had an old teacher kind of, I think, was Lola. And I'll let John take over.
You can't top that one, John. I don't think.
I don't. Like, what do I say? Okay. it definitely set the tone, you know, for the 70s. What was about to happen with the glam rock and the glitter rock and, a different topic that, you know, even today I think it'd be somewhat of a controversy to have a song about a transvestite make a top 40 song even today, but 1970 is pretty amazing. It became a hit because I'm sure there were radio stations that probably banned it, at the time, and that's not even mentioned that Ray had to change the lyrics. He actually wanted to say Coca-Cola. Because that's what it worked, but they made him, I think, change it to Cherry Cola, make it more generic, because they didn't want it to be affiliated with
Is that what they were worried about, the cola? That's funny. We don't care about that other part, but you got to change the Coca-Cola thing.
Exactly. I mean, there was more controversy with that than it was with the other behavior. I mean, what a story. I mean, what a story. It's one of those oddball stories where you're listening to it, and the first time you hear it, like, wait a minute, what did I just hear? You know, and because at first it sounds like your typical guy meets girl, and they're in this bar, But once you hear it all the way through, the second time and thereafter, you'll never hear it the same again.
Well, guys, we're running out of time. Thank you so much. This has been a great show. We'll have to do it again. We'll have to do it on Wednesday nights. If you can't do it, we'll try to swing it around on Saturday again. Whatever it takes to get this thing keep going, we'll do it. So anything in closing?
One thing, I hope one day Ray and Dave Davies shake hands. Let's get that Kink reunion. And, John, it's always great working with you on Saturdays, and you're a good friend, buddy.
Well, I really appreciate that, David.
And, John, I want to say that the Kinks, yes, they're in the Hall of Fame, and they're being recognized. But I think tonight, hopefully, people will realize they had so much influence they should be spoken in the same breath when you start rolling off the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Who. The Kinks should come right in there, and hopefully we've been able to give some credit to that. Thank you for the opportunity, John, to be on your show again. We really enjoy it. Again, you're doing a great service having this show and keeping the word out for music and independent music and keeping the history alive of rock and roll.
Well, thank you, guys. Have a great evening. We'll talk later. I'll see you next Saturday. And this
okay.
is Lola on John Talk Radio.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A, Cola. She walked up to me and she asked me to stand.